There's cracks in the mortar where the stones have settled in. Don't a goblin borders make a devil of a din? Won't you take this cold and broken stair to this old lair?
Hello, it is I, your internet friend, Jerriford K. Horcrims, and I've got bad news. It's possible it was an accident on your part. Certainly none of the blame would accrue to you, but you have started a podcast by me. Stop it now if that sounds like something you don't want. This is like the thing over the gate, like the hell gate, where it's like abandon all hope, ye who enter here, except I'm adding a separate section below it, which is like abandon all hope, ye who enter here, unless you kind of want to be here, in which case, hey, cool.
You're being completely upfront.
Yeah, exactly. I want to make sure that people understand the type of dark realm that they're entering.
You have to set expectations, as far as I'm concerned.
That's exactly right. That's well put. So, gathered throng, it's possible that you have already heard the voice of today's This Old Lair guest. It's Alyssa Grant, everybody.
Womp, 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 womp. Yeah, hi. Hello. Thank you for having me.
No, it's my great pleasure. So, we endeavored to record a podcast before, and I remember us recording the podcast.
Yeah.
What happened to that podcast?
It's gone forever. It is just donezo.
Did something happen to the card or something?
So the weird thing to me is that that was an amazing,
years ago.
It was a fantastic podcast.
Dude, don't oversell it because, who knows what we're going to be able to
this
deliver
gonna
today?
This was going to be trash, absolute trash, comparatively speaking.
This is
going
to be the elf, and I'm ashamed.
Yeah, well.
It's going to be fine.
Like you said, you already set expectations earlier, so, it's going to be trash.
And it seems like we do know stuff, and, we've made a lot of cool. I mean, it seems like, you know what? It seems like if anybody could make a great podcast, it's us, Alyssa.
Yeah.
And my grandpa's got some costumes in the attic. Let's put on a show.
Yeah, so we'll wear the costumes. No one will know, but at least we know. That's all that matters. Well, I think it changes the performance, personally.
It could. The horrifying thing is that as soon as I mentioned this costume trunk, I feel confident that in your mind, you immediately set about planning a show. And that's, I can tell just from the look on your face that it's true.
I was thinking about a costume show, but only audio. And so, we're all sitting in a wizard costume or, a hobbit costume.
But I bet that it would change it.
Probably.
I bet that if everybody was legitimately dressed up in sorceress raiment.
Yeah.
I bet that even the audio version of it would be improved.
Delightful. Yeah. And that's the thing is, I can't really do accents typically, but I swear to God, if I ever wore a wizard outfit, I'd be like, oh, hello.
Well, you
Cheerio.
You can do an accent, but it's an accent that no one knows about.
Yeah, that's
which
true.
Which is the Newfoundland accent.
It's awful too. I'm not proud of it.
I should look it up online. Because my suspicion is that the Newfie accent is even more intense.
Oh, yeah.
I think that you're actually being kind to us.
I don't do it justice. It's kind of it gets very slurry at some point that it becomes very difficult to
really?
Understand.
Just the consonants are spongy,
yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah, it's crazy. Can you do a Canadian accent?
I don't think so. Every now and then, only if somebody says something with a Canadian accent. In the few seconds afterward where it's my instinct to shame them.
Oh, yeah.
Then I can do it. But the rest of the time, I sort of...
It's like the imitation game kind of sort of... Well, I mean, can you say, I'm going to go out and about in a Canadian accent?
Yeah, but it would be so simple. I would just say... I would say oot and a boot. And then I would have a wry grin. It's it's not incredible material.
The happiness is part of it.
Listen, let's take it back.
Okay.
The year is 1976. At some point after this, Alyssa Grant, Elisar, the tongue of the elves.
The one and only.
So I knew you the very first time I met you. You were not, in fact, Alyssa Grant, but you were, in fact, Ciri.
That's right.
And so that's a wild thing to have tucked away. I assume we had met at a PAX.
Yes.
Right? So... Why were you dressed as Ciri? Like, how many How many lives have you had?
Gosh, so I got into, I guess, cosplay a little bit.
For sure, but that cosplay was so on point. I mean, was that official?
It was half official, half mine. So really? When I was working at Wizards of the Coast, I was going to do a Siri costume, and one of the people at WotC knew people at CD Projekt Red.
For sure.
And so they said, oh, we can hook you up with some pieces. So I got an entire costume. And so then I just, I picked out the pieces that I thought, you know, would look good with the stuff that I had already created.
I see. So it was like sort of an amalgam.
Yep.
Because the level of execution was, it was incredible. And also, that was going on at a time where I was really, really obsessed with The Witcher.
Yeah.
In general. So it was like, it was one of the more compelling ones that I did. So it was a semi-official in that you had some pieces, but were you there like in a promotional capacity too?
I did.
That is so cool.
I did stand at the booth for a bit. I, you know, was near that giant unicorn with the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I'm quite familiar. But that's how I met Holly too.
Was it really? What was she dressed as?
Commander Shepard.
No way, that was an incredible outfit.
I know, but I'm saying that like that's how I knew Holly before we started playing in AI together.
Yeah.
Right? So we already sort of knew each other. I'd like seen her sort of like outside of that. And then I saw her like up on stage, which is with a bunch of other people, and it's like I'm just bad at being like alive and like being in this society. And so I was just like, Holly! Holly, you're so cool! And it's just like, I see now, and she was like, she's like, hey, it's, you know, I'm fucking, you know, doing some shit right now.
Honestly, she's probably not, that's probably not abnormal.
No, I mean, the truth is, I mean, I talked to her for a bit yesterday, just trying to see if there's some cool shit we can put together. I'm gonna ring her up to come in and do some more brewing.
That sounds great.
One of the few, like, I mean, you know me. It's like I get done with something and then I try not to think about it ever again. Like the work that I just try not to look at it.
It hurts, like, if you think about it.
Yeah. I remember, like, I came away from it with a little greater knowledge of, like, what not to do, like, every time. Sometimes. Most of the time. I try to improve. Yeah, generally speaking. Well, anyway, here. Let's go back. So you were Siri.
Yes.
But it was a temporary affliction. It was like a cold.
Yeah, so yeah, I sneezed and suddenly this outfit was on me. And I was like, oh no, I have a scar on my face. I have this thing where I can't wear wigs. If I do wear wigs, it really just bothers me that they look so false.
Well, even the idea of a wig.
Yeah. Gives me hives.
No. Have you ever seen that picture? of me where my children have, in blue painter's tape, have taped the word hair on my scalp?
See, that's as good as it gets. It's basically a wig. It's basically
nonstop
a wig.
Torment is what, yeah, it is. But no, I mean, I don't have hair, like, in the classic sense. Like, there's some, but it's, like, this kind of the same as not having it.
What is the longest your hair has ever been?
Oh, dear God. I mean, the longest my hair has ever been was probably when I was 12 and 13.
Were you in a band by then?
No.
Okay.
No. I always liked music, but I didn't have the friends who could afford the instruments, and so that halts band formation.
That's fair.
But no, I had a mullet, like, full on, and I didn't have, like, just, like, a mullet. Like, you know how there's, like, the mullet where it's, like, it's sort of like a spike type thing up top, and then it goes back. That's the business.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the party aspect.
The business mullet, yeah.
I want you to imagine a scenario where the long part of the mullet on the back was permed.
It was permed? Do you have, you must have photos somewhere.
I have the school photos.
That's incredible. Did you ever do the rat's tail?
I had like a pick comb. No.
You
no,
had a
no.
pick
rat's
comb?
Rat's tails were quite common in my context.
Did you carry your comb around with you?
Sometimes I would have a comb in my back pocket, yes. Because I was told, that I needed to use it to maintain the vigor,
yeah,
of the curls. I deeply resent it. I feel like this is something my mother did to me.
Look, I've looked back at photos of myself. I found some. I thought that they were all destroyed from the age of, like, you know, 11 to 14. I thought they were all gone, and I was hoping they were all gone.
Is that that fucking flute picture you put up?
Oh, no, no. That was when I was, like, 16 or 17.
Fucking, I was like, oh, man.
That's a cool kid right there. That was the thought. Yeah.
Oh, no, trust me. It's like, you have to, I mean, you have to understand, we choir kids have a natural, fundamental respect and admiration for the band kid.
I don't think that's how it goes.
It certainly was true in our context.
Really?
Because we're often on the same trips.
Okay, that's fair. We never traveled with the choir kids. So did you sing with the band?
Sometimes it was a combo, yeah.
That's awesome.
Sometimes we'd work together. But I think that might have been because our choir director and our band director were good friends.
That would do it.
And so maybe that's what enabled that camaraderie.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I mean, obviously, neither of those groups are drama kids. And
that's okay.
They can't be here. But
yeah. I'm glad that that's a universal truth.
Cool.
I'm sorry to all the drama kids listening to this, but you know who you are?
There's a lot of energy there. It's just a lot of energy. But what's funny is once you get into like real life, you learn to appreciate that drama kid energy is actually very, very good.
Oh, it is.
If there's an opportunity to direct it.
If they can harness it.
Oh yeah. Like Laura's drama energy is, I mean, and sometimes I utilize it directly, like in the Tales from the Loop campaign, right?
Yes.
Like sometimes you can get like
the entire song.
I know.
That was incredible.
It was hard as hell. But so sometimes I like the opportunity to have, like, that was like a more direct application. But in general, drama kids, they just want to, live in a world that has a mythic sort of substrate underneath it.
Oh yeah.
And they want to live true, honest lives.
Yeah.
And so when you put a person like that in charge of signage and Q&A and these aspects of the show that are sort of omnipresent and really connect with people, like curating the questions, just as one example, like it's better because that person demands a world that has adventure in it.
Yeah.
And it's like that over at our friend Dan over at Two Beers. 100% drama kid all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, he basically is the brand.
Yeah.
Like in terms of its energy, it's just like this weird avatar of himself that he sends out.
I wonder if so many, you know, marketing or brand managers originally started in drama. That would make a lot of sense.
I think so too. Because in either case, brands and branding itself is about narrative.
Yeah.
And so the people who are really good at it, and of course, when I say really good at marketing, that can also mean capable of evil.
True.
Right? But a person who understands and really wants to be a part of a story can be very effective in that role for good or ill.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we basically, a long time ago, we brought you into the office when the Acquisitions Incorporated book was going to be a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Something that we put together. But you weren't working at Wizards at the time, but you had worked there before.
Yeah.
Can you go into that phase of your career and how it might have prepared you to do the profoundly ridiculous but also important things that you have to do here?
Yeah. So before WotC, I even started at a children's game studio called Cricket Moon. We made
Cricket Moon. God, why do I recognize this?
They worked on children's games from Hasbro, Nickelodeon, Disney, you name it. A ton of games.
So licensed IP.
Yeah. And we would, you know, try to get as many games out as possible casual games.
Yeah, mobile platforms or web?
Both.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's why I recognize it.
So I remember I worked on a Curious George game.
Killer.
An Astro Blasters game. I know, right?
Math Lala Loopsy? Blasters.
Yeah.
Lala Loopsy.
Motherfucking Lala
Damn,
Loopsy.
That's my shit.
Yeah. and so I had gotten quite a bit of experience working on other IPs through that, as well as some pretty lean timelines with project management. And so I went from there to Wizards of the Coast with that under my belt.
Oh, okay.
And then at WOTC, I was an associate producer and then turned producer. And I worked on Volo's Guide to Monsters. That was my main
book.
Which
is one of the more famous,
I'd appreciate
say.
That.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and that did extremely well. I left right before it launched. And then what else? I worked on a bunch of events. I worked on the Extra Life event there as well.
Oh, the streaming stuff?
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I produced the final seven novels of 2016,
2017? Dude, hold on. Even I didn't... This whole thing was supposed to be me asking you questions that I already know the answers to. You produced novels?
Yeah. Yeah. So I worked with all of the story editors of, you know, Edward Greenwood, of Bob.
What the fuck?
R.A. Salvatore.
Just R.A.
Yeah. Okay, so here is a funny story. I almost gave Bob a heart attack.
We were walking
around the office, and I, for some reason, would zoom around corners like I do because I'm just a goblin.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this.
Right, yeah. So that's pretty normal. In fact, I think they should have been watching the corners.
It's normal and fun.
Yeah, yeah, just having a good time. Woo, around the corner. And I ran into him, and legitimately, he grabbed his chest. He was so startled. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to kill this man right now. It actually flashed through my mind, so... So I worked on a lot of those books as well. Aaron Evans.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So those were my projects.
Dude, that is such great news.
Yeah.
So if I could put someone in front of you, because Mike and I actually have somebody that, like, forever and ever we have thought would be perfect for an AI novel.
Ooh.
Like, he is, like... literally our first choice.
Yeah.
And
Ryan Hartman. It's Ryan Hartman, isn't it?
Ryan the great.
Yeah.
Hartman.
Yeah.
No. No. Because he is the person who likes to say that he's writing a novel, but he no do it.
I haven't seen one yet.
Uh-huh. But no. Okay. So describe for, so because you are crafty in this context, so let's say I give you the name of this person.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like? So in your mind, you can already see time and have begun to apportion it. So what would it look like if we wanted to have someone like this person who I know and have already mailed about it? It was a long time ago. Don't worry. Don't be mad. You know,
no,
I get very excited sometimes in the night. So so in a project management capacity, how would you apportion that time and arrange that kind of project? I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start.
So you have the first big beat is coming up with the general outline of the book. So you're going to ask the writer, you know, what are you thinking? Give me your general chapters that you'd like to hit. You don't have to necessarily ask for content at that point, but you do want a general page count just to kind of understand what the scope of the project
is. You want a target.
Yeah, though, like that will fluctuate inevitably. In editing. But the biggest thing is I would make sure that we have a story editor with our writer, and they are the people to really help the writer along.
Oh, story editor. Okay, so yep. It's basically a person who, like, it's like a mystic focus.
Yes.
Like, it just helps you dial in what you're doing.
Yes, and that makes it so
that... I've never heard of that term.
As a producer, I am removed from the content, so I'm not... Like, I do like working on content itself,
yes.
But sometimes in the form of a novel, it's important for someone to be there to work with and collaborate with the writer directly.
More constant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're the person making sure that, you know, well, you said this in this chapter, but you need to make sure that there's continuity here for this chapter.
So do you know story editors?
I do.
What are they like? I feel like that's a mindset almost.
Yeah.
That sounds like I don't think just anybody could do that.
Imagine someone who's a hybrid.
It's like a fucking doula or something.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's sort of what the role, there's a spiritual component to it.
It really is.
Like.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I think they have to be in the mind of the writer in a certain sense, but
for
also
sure.
Slightly out of it. So in a way, they're like a hybrid between the two of us.
Yeah. So they have to have you'd have to have a relationship with that person, but the relationship couldn't be such that you couldn't really say things.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you can be close to someone and understand them, but not be able to tell them the truth.
Yep.
I mean, that's quite common, actually.
Yeah, it is. So it's I would say, like, in a way, a story editor is almost married to the writer during these projects. Then what we would do is, after a few iterations of drafts, and I would give at least, you know, 5 months of writing time for all of these
so
drafts.
So would this be something like, when you say these drafts, are these like milestones? Do these drafts include, like, chapters 1 to 7, you know, chapters 8 to 15, that type of thing?
From what I recall, I believe that it was, like, you would try to get the majority of the book fleshed out by the first draft. And then and then you might elaborate, or you might strip some stuff out for the second draft, and you might add, you know,
but
another
30
pages.
The first draft is really intended to be an end-to-end, so you can see the full arc, and then you
yes.
can fix it. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of the time people will do, like, a very loose, a very rough draft, and so they might have, like, you know, all whatever 13 chapters that they're going to do, but yeah. some of the chapters are obviously much shorter than they're going to be.
Nice. But it includes the key data
yeah.
that makes it chapter 14.
Exactly.
Then, I see.
Yeah, and then they kind of, you know, add all of the meat in the second draft, and then you can either have one or two more drafts after that, but you typically try to keep it a pretty small amount of drafts. And then from there, you have a copy editor and a typesetter. Sometimes they're one and the same, but oftentimes
not. And a typesetter is for layout, and a copy editor is for grammar and
correct.
Presentation.
Okay. Yeah, so a story editor isn't doing, you know, I mean, sometimes it will help with that work, with a copy editor work.
Mostly about the creative aspect.
Exactly. Gotcha. So a copy editor does all the technical stuff, and then a typesetter makes sure that the words look good on the page. So
for
that,
sure.
you know, there are paragraph breaks
font
that are
choice.
Appropriately. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
That's
is
really
important,
cool.
I suppose. But yeah. So, yeah, if you ever want to do a novel, honestly, I just like trying different projects just to see if we can do them.
Well, no, I can guarantee you we can do them.
Yeah.
I didn't even know you. God, I'm so pleased. I had no idea that you had that type of experience.
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally I have a fantasy where I'm going to be able to do something like that. And I've written, I can write short stories, but for a long time I just thought that I was lazy. And that may still be true, but that's not what's keeping me from writing the book. Writing books, I think, is its own, it's like its own art form.
Hmm.
And it would be weird, I think, if I could do the other specific types of writing and that. I mean, that would be unfair. That would indicate that I had no points in anything else.
Do you think that you would ever want to do, like, a novella? Like a shorter?
Maybe. There's all kinds of things that I would like to do.
Yeah.
All I know for sure is what, given the resources, I haven't accomplished. And I think that, like, writing a full book, I mean, part of why I like doing the C team.
Yeah.
Is that I have sort of the story ideas, but in terms of, like, all the speech bubbles, other people can fill those in. I mean, I'm basically the story editor
yeah.
for the C team, right? I sort of know
yeah.
where I feel like I know how it should sort of feel and where it should go, but a lot of the specific writing comes from the writing team.
I'll bet we can get your name on a novel pretty easily.
Well, you can just put it on a piece of tape and just put it on there. You can put it on any book.
I guess that's true. Yeah. In fact,
it works with the
looking
books
around for a book, but no books in sight.
It works with the books you have at home.
Yeah.
So that's killer. Okay. And so then
having
absorbed all of that rich experience, you know, the first time we really worked together in any official context was when you came over having designed end to end a Kickstarter project. And of course, I refer to that sometimes, like, on the stream, or if somebody ever asks about the book, just because it was very complete, but it represents a universe that we don't occupy.
Like, it really does.
The universe where we would have done that, and we would have been able to do it.
It's a very different timeline, yeah.
And our team wouldn't have changed.
Yeah,
right?
It would have been fine. And then at that point, too, I think we were scoping out Ak Ink the Series 2 the Kickstarter. And then we realized, well, I think the book is actually the next step here.
Yeah, yeah. Even I had forgotten that. There was periods of time where those two things were interleaved in a strange way.
Yeah.
We kept sort of, like, trying to make them a part of the same thing.
Yeah, like, in the Kickstarter, we're like, well, maybe we can do a book as a stretch goal. And, oh, my God, thinking about that now. That would have been insane.
Good Christ.
But, and then we did approach another Kickstarter for the book. Like, we tried to reskin the Series 2 Kickstarter plans for the book, and we got a good ways into that planning as well.
Yeah, yeah. That was just, it was another way that we could have spent the resources. But of course, that's all pre-C-Team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what we ended up doing was doing a streaming show, but, I mean, that's where that ended up going, as opposed to, like, a YouTube thing. But what's funny is that people, they like approaching that stuff in different ways. There's still a lot of people who preferred the idea of an episode coming out every week in video format,
yeah,
on YouTube, but...
But we figured out a solution for that, too, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, we sort of have that squared away, and, yeah, you know, and back then, we didn't even really have the awesome studio that we have now set up. It's, yeah, just hard to believe.
That's true.
Because you came, you actually, that was a long time ago, honestly. It doesn't feel like it, but it was a long time ago that you came on.
Yeah, it's been 3 years, which is, it blows my mind.
Yeah, to think about that. it's because we've been head down, like, just making cool shit.
Yeah.
But it didn't end up shaking out that way. What ended up happening, at least from my perspective, and I'd love to know what it looked like on your side, what became apparent quickly was that, independent even of this particular project, we actually really needed someone who had project management skills and interest generally. Like, yeah, the book, the fact that we needed someone to sort of marshal the resources to put this book together, and we didn't have that person, that's true. But we didn't have a person like that in general.
Yeah, at all.
To do a lot of different kinds of things.
Yeah.
It was sort of like just the environment was different. It was just sort of like we had resources and you could just pick them up and like put something together and do it if you wanted to. But that isn't always the most efficient use of those resources.
No, it's bonkers to me to even think that like Valve completely operates without project managers and producers. So
yeah, but Valve is a unique case. I mean, I've talked to lots of people who used to work at Valve. In fact, I think almost every person that I knew who worked at Valve doesn't work there anymore. And in a lot of those cases, what I've heard about that environment is that you do have those people. It's just that you don't know that you have, you don't actually know where the structure is until you run afoul of it.
Yeah.
And then you're in fucking trouble.
And then you realize what the gaps are.
Yeah, virtually. Exactly. It's like, it isn't that you don't have a manager.
Yeah.
It's that your manager is a ravening specter. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is a transparent ghost.
Yeah.
Really more of a, just a kind of anger that exists, and then eventually you find it.
Yeah.
But they have people who, you know, are at points in that structure where they can do whatever they want, essentially.
Yeah.
It's just that a lot of things don't end up happening there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So what was that experience like without having a project manager beforehand? Like how would projects, you know, come to
they
fruition?
Were just, it was basically just sort of hyper organic.
Yeah.
But there is a hard cap near the top in terms of like what you can accomplish with that methodology.
Yeah.
That isn't to say you can't put together cool work.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can definitely do neat projects and you can put out, you know, things that are surprising and sometimes surprising by virtue of their organic sort of origin.
Yeah.
But there is a ceiling on the sophistication of what you can accomplish that way.
Look, I'm just imagining Penny Arcade Wild West right now. Like, there were...
No, there's definitely a period.
Tall grass here, tons of
Pokemon
sand.
Pokemon in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Lurking. but that's... I think that's the main thing that, you know, the age of Alyssa has resulted in, is that it just... The chops, like the project management chops, just they seem to sort of create a scaffold under a neat, what starts out as a neat idea. And then, you know, a year later, you can put out, you know, Wizards of the Coast's first sort of externally produced collaborative IP type book. Like, I've seen your spreadsheet just for the art orders.
Oh my gosh.
You see what I mean? But
I dreamt about that spreadsheet many times.
What, did you dream about its colors?
Oh my gosh, so many
and
times.
And its dates?
Sometimes I would, just to think through things, I would go change the coloring around. Just so that I understood exactly what I was doing. It's kind of like when I need to decompress, sometimes I just reorganize my board game collection at home by color or by theme. Right now it's kind of color and theme.
Are you hearing this? Podcast audience? So, I mean, my theory... So there's a... Have you read Hitchhiker's Guide?
I have not
that
yet.
That series?
No, I'm ashamed.
I have a volume... I have one book that has four books like in it.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, it's just a single big volume.
That must be huge.
It's plump.
Like, you know, for the podcasters, I'm pulling my hands up and everyone can see that.
It's not that big. But no, Brandon and I brought it to Ireland. And we basically like read that whole book over that trip on the plane. And
did you read it out loud or did you guys take turns reading it? How do you do it?
No, we both just read the book and we had a system for when the page could be turned. We just had a system for when the page could be turned. Like I said, there is a ceiling for, you know, trying to do projects without good project management, but organic planning can, you know, solve certain problems.
Do you read at the same speed?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Otherwise, it wouldn't work.
No. If we didn't read at the same speed, there'd be other problems in our relationship.
Yeah. Marriage over.
Yeah. Canceled.
Yeah.
But that's the, I would say that's the thing that has been so much fun is it's possible to have ideas that are bigger because I know that the scaffold can be built underneath it.
Thanks, Jerry.
Very, very cool. No, thank you, Alyssa.
No, please.
No, is this the Canadian compliment
spiral? Yeah,
have I
here
heard about
go.
This? Listen, we're going to get out of it. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thank you so much, Club PA, for supporting the work we do. I'll see you next time.